Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 75 for the week of March 19th, 2007. Hey, this is Norm the Intern hosting this week's PC Gamer Podcast. Joining me today is Dan Stapleton.
At home.
Logan Decker.
Good afternoon.
Gary Witta.
Hello, hello, hello.
And hailing from the Midwest, Jeremy Williams.
Live from Chicago.
Our first news story today, MSN has a story about playing video games and how it can actually improve your eyesight. Do you believe it?
Yes.
Well, apparently they've got scientific evidence. Just ask the scientician.
And the games they list as working the most to improve your eyesight are Gears of War, Lost Planet, and Halo.
First person shooters.
Playing games like Tetris doesn't work.
How does looking at a two-dimensional screen improve your eyesight in any way, shape, or form?
Well, it's not improving your depth perception. It's just improving your ability to track. Moving objects.
Hand-eye coordination.
But actually using the eyes, the muscles in your eyes can help you focus.
I'll read the article. It says that people who started out as non-gamers and then played about 30 hours of first-person video games showed a sustainable increase in their ability to see objects accurately in cluttered space compared to non-gamers given the same test.
So if you play video games and then play with yourself, do those two things cancel each other out?
No. If there's a lot of cluttered space, yeah.
All right.
So this isn't really eyesight. This is more of like parsing ability.
Well, your ability to process your vision.
It's brain power.
Yeah. I don't think there's any physical change to your retina or, but your nerves inside. You know, your optical.
No, you can strengthen the muscles in your eyes and get better focus and therefore better vision.
Yeah.
But my point is you're not focusing on anything but a 2D screen, so you're always the same depth of focus.
Yeah, but using the whole muscle complex in the eye, I actually have no idea what I'm talking about, so I'm just gonna drop that.
Well, their explanation for it is that first person shooters improve their spatial resolution, meaning that their ability to see small, closely packed, tight their objects like letters, that's improved.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, it sounded just like that.
I think ultimately it is kind of a push, isn't it? Especially with PC gaming where you sit quite close to the screen. I mean, I'm almost certain that the reason why I am nearsighted is that I have spent the vast majority of my life staring at a flat, bright object 18 inches away.
Do you notice that? Like year after year, you slowly have to get closer to the monitor to
That's
called aging.
Well, luckily the monitors keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yes,
I think it's something to do with the fact that you're always focusing your eyes at something very close to you, and so it's inevitable that you're not going to be. After a while, your eyes just aren't as good at seeing things, you know, further away.
Well, my eyesight has always been like that. I mean, my dad, who's in his 70s, can read like road signs further away than I can, and it always has been able to. So a lot of that I think is just your natural, the way your eyes just work.
Well, maybe, but the couple of times that I've been to the opticians a few times over the years now to have my glasses, my prescription change, and they're always just progressively getting a little bit thicker. And, when they ask you, what do you do for a living? I say, well, I have a desk job, kind of. I just stare at a computer screen all day. She's like, yep, that's why.
Well, I'm sure it doesn't help, but I mean, also eyesight just progressively.
Right, so that's the you just said it there. I'm sure it doesn't help, and
no,
that's
it doesn't help,
that's
the
right. So playing video games doesn't help your eyesight because it's the same thing staring at a flat screen 18 inches away.
That's not what this article says. The article actually puts forth some therapeutic applications for this and says that the findings suggest that playing FPS games could be useful for rehabilitation therapy for people with certain vision problems. Such as lazy eye or the simple effects of aging.
Who got it?
Right, and that's why I said I think it's kind of a push, because I have no problem believing that, tracking moving objects and things that might be hard to see on a screen can do things like help your visual acuity, but it's a push because at the same time you are kind of screwing your long-distance vision, I think, because you're constantly focusing on this one close-up object.
When he says push, it's like in a blackjack sense of the word.
It cancels it out. Yes.
Yeah, I thought you were saying it's like a stretch.
No, it's a push. We're better off than people sitting 8 hours a day in front of Excel documents and or playing Tetris, for that matter. Moving on to another study of how video games can affect our daily lives, we have this article on GamePolitics.com that says that in Germany there's a study of racing games, and it says that fans of racing games drive more recklessly. Now, I know for Dan, this is true, right?
Well, I mean, when I had a car, I haven't had a car in like 2 years, but back when I had a car and was playing like GTA, I would get out on the road and get stuck in traffic. Yeah. And I would rip people out of their car and beat them. No, I would get out on the road and get stuck in traffic and think, well, okay, I'll just push this guy out of the way. just kind of nudge him a little bit. Like, no way, I can't do that. No. So I kind of, you know, I caught myself thinking like that a few times. And, you know, maybe drove a little bit more aggressively than I ordinarily would. Although I'm usually kind of a conservative driver, so.
I think, yeah, there's probably a little bit of truth to this. I know when I played Ridge Racer a while back, there was a time when I spent, I think, a whole week playing nothing but Ridge Racer. And then I was in Japan, actually. And then coming back, not even driving, but sitting in the back seat of someone's car, I would want the car to drift around corners and anticipate it. But it wasn't there.
This is like the same logic that leads to the violent video games cause real world violence stuff. I mean, there might be some crossover. It's like a chicken and an egg thing, though. I mean, people who drive crazy are probably going to enjoy the racing games. True.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that playing racing games is going to make you drive recklessly. I mean, maybe there's a short term effect where after
you're
you finish.
You're using correlation with causation.
Right.
Have you ever been to like a go-karting track where they quite seriously warn you afterwards not to get in your car and drive home right away?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's a short-term effect, and I do that after playing GTA. You know, I think about jumping in any car I see on the street, obviously, but it doesn't last more than 5 minutes.
Right.
That's right. The article says, or the study says, that it was done in Germany, and it says driving actions in these games often include competitive and reckless driving, and it changes our risk acceptance. So we do more risk, or we're tempted to take more risky actions.
Well, I mean, driving games are more of a simulation than, you know, a first-person shooter.
Because, that's true.
I mean, first-person shooter is more arcadey than you know, realistic.
Do you ever have that thing? I don't know if it's just me, but do you ever have that thing where you're, like, talking to someone, and it's a perfectly pleasant, civil situation, you know, just two people talking, and they're kind of talking, you're kind of, like, zoning out a little bit and trying to pay attention to what they're saying. But then, like, halfway through, like, these thoughts start to creep into your head, like, I wonder what would happen if I just punch this person in the face right now.
Yes.
Just for no reason at all. Like, how would events, you know, transpire? And I sometimes wonder if I've just got a mental problem, or if that's something that a lot of people think, or if that's something that video games has done to me.
I will admit that I've had that, you know, occur to me. It's like, what would happen? You know, it's not like I actually want to hurt somebody. It's like, well, you know, how would that play out? You know, but, you know, it's...
I wish sometimes I had like that TiVo button where you could just rewind life like 9 seconds back. So you could do that.
That was a terrible movie, and it was called Rewind.
there was that Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
No, I don't need to be able to pause and speed up and rewind real life or anything as elaborate as that. I just want that 10 seconds save point so that I could do something crazy like that and then just hit the button and it didn't happen. But I get to see immediately
Omega
what the reaction
7
is.
From Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, you see that kind of thing all the time. Yeah, Omega 13.
Omega 13, that's right.
And they had, I mean, like, you see that kind of thing in movies all the time, so I don't think it's a game-related thing. I think it's something people have always wanted to do.
Oh, right, like in True Lies.
High Fidelity, you've seen that? Where John
Oh, that's right, when he breaks the guy's nose.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think he breaks the guy. Doesn't he, like, punch the guy's nose up through his brain or something?
I think they murder him in one of the segments.
Well, yeah, they like, hit him with a boombox or something like that. You know, it's
But then it kind of snaps back, and you realize that he just imagined doing it, and he didn't really do it.
It was the air conditioner. Yeah. I think.
You know what, this is a very comforting conversation for me, because I'm starting to realize now, maybe it's not. I always thought that was like a serious psychological problem that I had, but maybe it's more common than I.
You have more serious psychological problems to worry about.
I do, but it's nice to be able to cross at least one off the list.
The same thing happens to me, Gaz, right down to thinking I have a psychological problem.
Excellent, good. I'm glad to hear it.
We all share it. All right. Well,
but wait, maybe. We all play video games, so maybe it is video games.
Yeah. But does John Cusack?
According to the Korea Times, there's a new startup in Korea that's working on developing this sound. I don't know what we'd call it. It's not a white noise or a brown noise, but it's apparently an inaudible sound that, when played, can reduce a game addiction.
Well, it supposedly makes a gamer want to stop playing. I don't know how this is even possible.
I believe that's better known as the Daikatana soundtrack.
Zing. But yeah, and they're saying it sends the gamer this message like thousands of times per second.
It sounds like it's subliminal, but instead of having hidden messages incorporated into like actual soundtrack, it's almost like white noise. You don't hear anything, but it's actually at high frequency messages.
So does it come with X-ray specs or
smoke?
It comes with.
Does this just work for games or for any kind of compulsive behavior?
They don't really specify in there,
but theoretically, I mean, if that's just the technology behind it, if it's just a message recorded, 20,000 times a second, then it should work for anything.
Do you guys remember The Emperor's New Clothes?
Yeah, or it's like a placebo kind of thing.
I have a sound. You can't hear it, but I promise you, it will cure your disease.
Well, the placebo effect is quite well documented in medicine. It does work, so.
Yeah.
Maybe even as a placebo, maybe it works. But it seems like maybe this is specific to game addiction, because if they had actually cured addiction, like, the story wouldn't be they've cured video game addiction. I mean, there's quite a few bigger addiction fish to fry before you have to worry about people who are addicted to video games.
Right. I think it might be like a really annoying noise that, eventually makes, I mean, like, is somehow subconsciously annoying. It's like, I gotta get away from this. This is driving me nuts. That would be my best guess.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
The best part of the article is this line that says, our experience tells us that kids or adolescents simply don't stop playing games when faced with forceful measures. Such attempts can cause many side effects. Like, I imagine hitting a kid in the head, beating them to stop them from playing games. Yeah, a lot of side effects.
They won't stop playing, and it will cause brain damage. Well, I guess this could also melt your brain.
Exactly.
But I guess I heard something a while back about how like some shop owners were trying to get rid of rowdy teens loitering in front of their stores, so they would have like this high pitched noise that older people couldn't hear, but like teenagers can, and it would just annoy them. They also tried that, like playing Barry Manilow music.
At the end of the article, it does say that the message can be changed, so the potential for this technology is "quote unquote" exponential. I'm definitely gonna, if it works, I'm gonna license technology and use it to get dates.
Go out with Norm.
20,000 times a second.
That's right.
I think you'll have better luck getting 45 million from Nigeria.
So Richard Garriott, as most or some of you may know, Lord British, a pioneer in the RPG genre, he was recently robbed. One of his complexes, facilities, I don't know, apparently he has this ranch in Austin, I think, where he holds get-togethers and, I don't know, maybe LARPing adventures. this complex was robbed last week, and kids broke in and stole about or consumed about $5,000 worth of alcohol, which is pretty amazing.
On the premises.
Yeah. On the premises. They had their own party. They had their way with his land.
That
they
is
looted.
Balls.
He was
$800 bottles of wine.
Yeah. The best part is that after partying, these kids left their digital camera on the premises, and when the cops came, they found the digital camera, and it has photos of them partying.
Well done.
Oh, boy. I had a radio station growing up that did a segment every morning called Crooks Are Stupid.
Yep.
Can you imagine if your kid was not only criminal, but a dumb one? Jeez. I'd just start all over again.
So that's the thing. It's like, you know, if I was the parent of one of these kids, I wouldn't be ashamed of the fact that he had become a delinquent or a criminal, because I think you can excel in any field. But if you're a stupid criminal, it's just the same as being a stupid, you know, being stupid at anything really. If your son was like grew up to be like an evil genius criminal mastermind, you'd probably be quite proud of that.
Yeah,
because you know he's still the best at what he does. But being a dumb criminal is pretty much the worst thing you can be.
There's a great quote from Richard Garriott here saying, "We were debating whether we would even report this to police until we discovered the digital camera sitting on the porch of one of the cabins broken into," he said. we were joking to ourselves about tomorrow morning when they would wake up from a hangover, and they're going to wonder where that camera is. This is one of those Darwin-style kinds of awards where people leave the self-incriminating evidence behind at the scene.
It's just the one guy, though. You know he's not real popular right now in that group.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. These crims could still have the last laugh. Maybe like a few weeks from now, Garriott will get to the end of that memory card of digital pictures and find like his toothbrush up one of their arseholes.
Nice.
they've got a couple of the pictures here where you know these white kids are all flashing gang signs. It's pretty...
It's getting dumber and dumber.
There's white kids in gangs.
If that's the same house that I went to many years ago in Austin, it's a really nice house. It's very, very cool, and he's got like a big pool that's kind of half inside and half outside. You know, you can kind of swim underneath a thing, and then the pool kind of comes out into the backyard. If you're going to break into a house to have a party, I mean, that would be the one.
I don't know if it was his house. The article just says it was his property. I think he has a series of properties that he uses for like retreats and stuff, and that's why he would have lots of alcohol there. But yeah, I wonder if these kids knew whose property they were breaking into.
Yeah.
Well, where did most of his money come from? Is that all Ultimate money? Or
Ultima
money?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all of Origin Systems, really.
Right. Right.
Wing Commander.
Yeah, it's true. But I guess right now he's working on Tabula Rasa for NCSoft, right?
That's right.
And looks mighty pretty.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of that at GDC. It looked very impressive. And that one's one that's been through several iterations, and it looks radically different now than it did like 3 years ago at E3. So I'm looking forward to seeing how it comes out.
Here's an interesting piece of PC gamer trivia for you. Maybe you can correct me here, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that
You're
Richard
wrong.
Garriott is the only person, like real actual person, who has been photographically featured. He's been the cover star of PC Gamer twice. The only person who has that feat.
Looking right. at our covers, after the Star Trek issue and before the Jedi Knight issue way back, that's definitely Richard Garriott.
There's the one of him that we did when he's kind of holding the sword in his face.
Yeah,
that's from like, back from like 97 years ago.
Yeah,
and then he was one of the Game Gods with John Carmack and Sid Meier. I don't think anyone
right.
else has ever been on the cover twice.
You're right.
Well, how about that?
How about that? He's like Duke Nukem, but a real person.
Or Gordon
Duke
Freeman.
Duke Nukem. Or Gordon Freeman, that's right.
I met Richard Garriott years ago at E3. He was in Kensha Hall, like, pitching NCSoft when they were merging.
Yeah, we met him at GDC.
You know, reading his biography, it's actually really interesting, you know, why he's named Lord British and, you know, how he created the Ultima series. And just that character, how it became like a Easter egg thing on how to kill him in the Ultima games.
Yeah.
Because he theoretically could never be killed.
And yet he was.
He was, actually, in Ultima Online. One of the first MMOs, during the beta test, he took control of his NPC, because Lord British is an NPC, and during one of his addresses to the public, he forgot to turn on his invincibility firewall, and someone in the audience threw a fireball at him or something, and killed him, and then looted him.
I love that story.
Yeah.
Tell it again.
Hey, when is Stevie Case going to be on the cover again? What's she working on?
Be nice.
Could be a while.
I don't think she's in the game development anymore.
I don't think she was in game development then.
Five games that should be movies, an article on MSN.com. Do you want to talk about the games and what you think, being, you know, from the movie industry?
Well, the story was on MSNBC.com this week. Scott Miller from 3D Realms actually sent it to me because Prey, which I co-wrote the script for, is one of the five games that was featured. The other games are Halo, Metroid, the well-known Nintendo exclusive shooter franchise, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, which actually, of all the games here, is the only one that actually is in active development as a movie.
Halo?
And Fear.
Well, Halo, the production of the Halo movie is kind of, it's at a standstill.
Right.
Peter Jackson is producing it, and Weto's doing some character designs, but I don't think, some studios backed out.
Fox and Universal, I mean, that movie is not in active development right now. It's just sitting there. Nothing is happening with it.
Yeah. They're going to use Massive for it, which was really exciting. Massive is the technology that Peter Jackson's company developed to create the armies in Lord of the Rings. So it's going to have some, you know, thousands and thousands. Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think, you know, I don't think Bungie and Microsoft are going to let a movie not happen. But the particular incarnation that they were talking about, which was an incredibly huge, massive budget and some very aggressive terms for creative control and financial participation for Microsoft, and a director who had never made a feature film before, all added up to the studios going, we don't think so. So it's kind of been stopped for right now, but I'm sure that at some point they will kind of represent a new version of it that the studios feel like they can get behind. But certainly the incarnation that they tried to make was just considered too much of a risk.
Well, hopefully they can keep Peter Jackson attached to it, because I'm sick of seeing bad adaptations of, you know, what could have been good movies from video games.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they were well into it. You know, they had a lot of the ship and creature designs, you know, done at Weta Workshop, and I believe they were on their second version of the script, and they'd hired it around. I mean, it was all supposed to be full steam ahead, but the amount of money they were talking about to make this movie, I just think they were maybe being a little too ambitious.
Let's jump back to Prey, and Fear is actually the fifth game on this list. I know a game like Fear probably would make a good action movie. I mean, it takes a lot from Hollywood already, but it could be like an Eli Roth movie, I think.
I don't know. It's awfully generic for a movie. I mean, it seems to borrow stuff from movies all over the place. I don't know how well it would be, you know, translated back into a movie.
I don't know. I can kind of see how movie companies would be excited by how you would pitch this. I mean, I always thought of it in terms of, you know, kind of The Ring meets Aliens, and that is kind of a mashup that has the potential to be a, you know, an original piece. You know, when they showed it at E3 a couple of years ago, Steven Spielberg came by and they sat him in front of it and they tried to get him interested. As far as I know, they are still trying to get people interested in making a movie. I don't think a deal has been made, but it is something that they're very aware of, the fact that it has cinematic potential, and they are trying to make it happen.
And for a game like Prey, I actually think a more lighthearted action movie, maybe in the vein of Army of Darkness, would be a good fit. I mean, you obviously wrote part of the script, so what do you think?
Well, the tricky thing with Prey is that, you know, the original script was always intended. The original intention that 3D Realms had was for it to be played pretty much straight. I mean, the idea that they were going to have a Native American hero and the real character arc, aside from kind of fighting off the aliens, was about, you know, a guy who had denied his Native American, his Cherokee heritage, and through this journey of adversity that he goes on, you know, comes to kind of embrace it, because he needs, you know, it's kind of spirituality and the various powers that the otherworldly, you know, Native American spirits can bring him to help him fight the aliens. It was meant to be kind of a journey of spiritual self-discovery. And obviously it's very broad, and, you know, there's only so much of that you can effectively communicate in a game. We tried to get some of it across. I think in a movie, then, you know, there's a much larger opportunity to you know, to effectively tell that character part of the story. The problem with doing kind of a broad, campy Evil Dead approach is that if you're going to have a Native American hero and you're going to have these elements of this journey that he's on, I think to do it in a kind of a campy Bruce Campbell type way, you run the risk of offending people. And I think that if you're going to stick to the idea of the Native American heritage and the whole Cherokee thing, I think you have to treat that with respect and play it straight. Otherwise, I think you can get into dangerous territory. So I don't know what they want to do with it. I know that they've had some people approach them about the idea of doing a movie. No one that particularly excites them yet, but they are interested.
Did Uwe Boll ask?
I think
it's funny. Uwe Boll gets, you know, they just. They announced the Gears of War movie earlier this week, and people are going, oh my god, is Uwe Boll going to do it? No, he only does the really, really bad ones that they can't get any other director interested in. I think it's fair to say that Uwe Boll would not be allowed anywhere near any of the movies on this list, because they're all pretty high-profile projects, and they can do a lot better.
Hey, Norm, does the article talk about what the criteria was they used to decide what games are movie-worthy?
I don't think so. It was just this writer's opinions.
I'm just curious.
It just says, here are five games we'd love to see made into good movies.
If I was coming up with a list that was based purely on popularity, why not choose Grand Theft Auto or World of Warcraft? I know WoW's in production.
Grand Theft Auto, World of Warcraft, and Half-Life, and Grim Fandango. I mean, there's a whole bunch of games on this list. And Interstate 76, there's a whole bunch of games that I've always felt had the potential to make good movies. And you could argue all day about what would be on your top five. This is the five that they've put forward to provoke discussion, and obviously they've been successful. It's not, there's an essential problem with video games and movies in that a lot of video game characters are deliberately made to look anonymous so that you as the player can relate to that character and kind of pretend that it's you in the suit. But when you're talking about a movie, it's the opposite. You need to be able to see the character's face and for the guy to be able to act. And if it's just going to be an avatar in the Halo guy with the suit on the whole time in the helmet, you're going to have a harder time relating to that character. So this is always a problem they have with these Halo stroke Metroid stroke Judge Dredd type characters, where they kind of have to bite the bullet and take the helmet off, and that's going to piss off gamers.
Well, what about movies starring Keanu Reeves? He shows no emotion.
I think the trick is probably just to ignore the protagonist and create your own, and just use the environment, use the world.
That's what they did in Doom, and look what happened there.
The less said about that movie, the better.
that, of course, is probably what's going to happen with something like World of Warcraft, where there is no protagonist. It's just a world.
Yeah.
And so, for that, they're probably going to have to create original characters to inhabit that world, because there isn't, a Lara Croft or a Master Chief or a Tommy from Prey that you can relate to.
I'm sure that at Blizzard they've got so much lore, they've got to have like a favorite story they want to tell. All that lore has, this character went off and had the great battle of such and such, and so they'll probably expand on something on like that.
And if all else fails, they can always get the World of Warcraft actors in the movie.
Yes.
At least for a cameo.
I think the one of all the ones that are on this particular list, the one that has the best chance of being a good movie based on its pedigree and the source material and who's involved, is the one that actually is the furthest ahead. It's the Prince of Persia movie. I mean, they've got a great team of people working on that. They've got Jerry Bruckheimer producing it. They've got Jordan Mechner, the original creator of the game, writing the script in close collaboration with some really very talented A-list writers. And, it's just, it's a really cool, exotic world, and you can kind of imagine, an Eastern Pirates of the Caribbean kind of feel for, kind of adventure, swashbuckling, dusky maidens, which I just think there's a good movie in there.
Yeah, it could definitely be cool, I mean, especially if they build in a couple of the little time travel tricks and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, that was the very smart thing they did with the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, was adding that kind of supernatural element, and now that the bar has been set there, and it's been demonstrated that you can kind of do that and make tons of money, I think that Prince of Persia is probably, if anything, has been helped by that, as they think, well, now we can kind of, let's take another crack at the same kind of tone and the same kind of material, except this one is full of Eastern promise.
That's what they said about Tomb Raider, and I thought that those movies sucked.
They did suck. The first Tomb Raider is one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I didn't go anywhere near the second one.
Have you seen Death Wish 3, Dan?
No, I have not.
Have you seen
really,
Death Bed?
Really see Death Wish 3?
Have you seen Daredevil?
Oh,
it's not even in the same league.
Johnny Mnemonic.
I have that on TiVo, actually. I just TiVo'd it. I haven't watched it.
I'm sorry.
you should take out your hard drive and destroy it before it
destroys. All right, let's move on. Speaking of Supernatural games, PC gamers will have a new franchise, or one that we've never had on the PC. Devil May Cry, the new one. Devil May Cry 4 is now going multi-platform, jumping from the PS3 over now to the 360 and a simultaneous release on the PC.
We have had it on the PC. We just haven't had it at the same time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm always, you know, a big advocate of multi-platform development, at least when it comes to Xbox or PlayStation games that I want to play. I could care less if they get PC games as long as they don't dumb them down for them. But my experience with Devil May Cry, I played a little bit of the PS2. I think it was Devil May Cry 2. And my biggest problem with it was the freaking camera. Was the worst game camera I've ever experienced.
It's a terrible one. Yeah, I mean, so awful. I didn't know how it got to be as popular as it did.
Yeah, and I could never ever see what I wanted to see when I was, you know, when I was fighting. So that drove me nuts.
I think it's a good thing that we're getting this at the same time as the console versions, though.
And absolutely.
It's maybe a bit too much to hope for, but I would love it if, since the PC isn't really kind of considered, I don't think, onto the same level, you know, in competition with the consoles, the way that, you know, say 360 and PS3 are considered to be in competition with one another, that any time a game comes out on a console, then there should also be a PC version. You know, what's the harm?
Yeah, well, I mean,
well, here's what the harm is. The harm is that the PC version, most of the time, or at least in the past, have been bad ports, and they're not, you know, they're not high quality games. They don't go through the same amount of extensive QA as a AAA PC title.
There's no reason why that should be the case, though, because now we've got, you know, we've got really good gamepad control standards on the PC. A good PC is pretty much more powerful than any console on the market. There's no reason why you should have to compromise.
It's the publishers, they don't want to put the money in it, and you know, it is unfortunately an afterthought for them, and it does sour the experience.
Three words: Star Trek Legacy.
And you know, in the, you know, Splinter Cell, the new one, and to some extent, the last Rainbow Six Vegas also.
Yeah, I just don't get it though. I mean, I understand that they are bashing these things out on the cheap, but is there not an argument to be made that if you actually make a good version, you might sell more copies and make more money?
Oh no, that's totally a good version, but it's a risk that sometimes publishers don't feel like they want to take, because the money they'd save is better than the money they would have to spend on promoting it and then trying to make it back. It is unfortunate, but the fact that Devil May Cry 4 is going to come out on the PC, it's probably a good thing, and I'm glad it's coming on the PC. And it'll probably, for gamers, it'll be cheaper, too.
That's a Capcom game, right?
It is a Capcom
game. Yes.
So hopefully, if they continue that company-wide, if they come out with a Dead Rising 2 or...
Exactly.
Dead Rising 2 for PC would be very welcome.
Yeah.
Add some great multiplayer in it, and it'd be a star title. But yeah, it's games on the PC are definitely cheaper, and that's one of the big perks. Which ties into this next article that we want to talk about.
The Forbes story.
The Forbes story of why games are so expensive these days, at least on the console side.
Why next gen console titles are anyway. Mm-hmm. And they have a breakdown of you know, where all this money goes.
Break it down.
no, I will not. They say that the publisher actually only makes about $1 per game sold. So they pretty much have to sell 100,000 or more copies in order to just break even of any of these new next gen titles.
Does the $59 go?
I think the title of the story is a little misleading. They're not really explaining why it costs $60. They're just saying here's who gets what percentage. Of what, you know, because there's only one reason why they cost $60, and that's because people will pay it.
Well, there's that, and why does a next generation game cost this much, whereas a last generation game costs less? And they do, you know, explain that in development costs. It does cost a lot more now to develop games.
But the
big question is, why do next gen console games cost more than a PC AAA game? And the difference there is the licensing fees that goes directly to Microsoft or Sony or Nintendo.
Yeah.
I've seen some discussion. I mean, I don't know too much about the financial side of the industry. It's boring to me, but I've seen a lot of discussion online about this article where a lot of people that do work you know, in development and publishing have basically said that these numbers are complete bullshit.
Well then, maybe we'll skip it. But the licensing fee thing does stand. That's a big difference in the development costs of PC games versus console games, because Microsoft and Nintendo and Sony all take a chunk. That's how they make money back when they sell their consoles at a loss.
That's very true. But I mean, if you do the math, if 45% of a $60 game goes to development costs, let's say that round that up to 40, you know, 50%, that's like $25 out of each $60 game goes to pay back the programmers and the artists. You know, a million game seller, even like a Gears of War 4 million game seller, that's a whole lot of money. That's over, you know, almost $50 million. I don't know if the math is correct. But
I think the biggest single chunk when you add up the various different semi-chunks actually goes to retail in terms of what the retailer takes out of the sale, and then the additional costs that you have to pay to get good positioning. You know, major games, you know, they want to get that good stacking at the end of the aisle. That, you know, that adds up to a pretty significant chunk for the retailers.
Yeah, in this article they say about 25%. But if it's not accurate, then whatever.
Yeah, that's why e-tailing is probably the wave of the future. To close things off today, we'll jump to this last news story about this shooter that we found online and actually plays in your browser. And actually, there have been a lot of these Flash 3D Flash games coming out in the past couple of years, but this one looks pretty good.
I'm impressed.
It's one of the more impressive browser games I've seen. It looks almost like a original Unreal game.
Yeah.
Just the graphical quality of it. And it's plenty fast. We haven't been able to get the multiplayer working yet, but it claims to support it. But you go to this website. What's the website, Norm?
I think it's rasterworks.com, and works is W-E-R-K-S.
So it's rasterworks.com. And it's... You know,
don't go there until we're finished with it.
Yeah, it loads up in Flash, so you'll have to install the latest version of Flash. I tried to play with an old version, and the mouse wouldn't work.
But it's not just Flash; it requires that you install Shockwave.
Yeah, it's telling me that right now that I need to install.
Well, it's Shockwave Flash. So.
But I had Flash installed, and it wouldn't run, so it requires the Shockwave is a different thing.
A bunch of plugins, but it runs in your browser, and if you have a fast enough CPU, then you can have a good time at your office.
Yeah, it's surprisingly good. I've seen a lot of those JavaScript kind of Wolfenstein-looking things, which are kind of tech demos, but this really looks like a serious shooter. It's pretty neat.
Oh, here we are. Okay, let's start. WASD. Oh, God,
I do remember seeing one that was like almost a direct port of Quake 3, of one of the levels.
Really?
Didn't run nearly as well as this one does, though.
And it didn't have multiplayer. This one has multiplayer, which is really cool.
Wait, what's the fire button?
Just click.
Left click.
And here we go.
These are all set up wrong for me. I can't play left-handed like this.
All right. Yeah, I'm playing it right now. I couldn't have guessed.
I'm taking a bath.
This is pretty cool for inside a browser.
Totally.
Yeah, it's very cool inside a browser. Like if I worked at a reputable office, I might fire this thing up during my lunch break and go to town, you know, as long as I've got Flash on my browser.
The only thing it's missing is a boss key.
Yeah.
So if the developers are listening, no, put in a boss key.
Oops, didn't know it was loaded.
I mean, there's nothing here to kill, though. It's just an empty environment.
No, there's bots.
Oh.
The bots are actually pretty good.
They're okay. They do tend to stop and shoot at you while holding
Logan was just killed by a bot.
Oh, there's a bot. Bot player one.
I slipped.
Oh, right, he killed me. Oh, I don't like this game.
It's one map, and you know it seems to be, you know, it's labeled beta all over the place.
So it's called Phosphor.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, it's a good time. You know, if you've got nothing, if you've got no real shooter to play, this is a good way to kill a few minutes.
Oh, you can change the keys. Did you know that? If you go to settings from the start screen, you can actually change the video resolution and all kinds of stuff.
Cool.
Hey everyone, it's Vagabond again. Lots of things that interest me have developed since the last time I sent in a question. The most interesting is the announcement of Wing Commander Arena. This is the first original Wing Commander game in 9 years, It's an arcade-style space shooter that retains a Wing Commander element. The good things is that it really follows the fiction and universe of Wing Commander. The bad thing is that it's for the Xbox 360. It's going to be a download-only game. Being the avid Wing Commander fan I am, I'm probably going to have to buy a 360, then pay $50 for the live service, then pay $15 for the game. I can see the many benefits of having a new Wing game this way. If it sells well, it's going to open up doors to bigger and more better Wing games. Hopefully for Vista and DX10. I was just wondering what you guys felt about this new temporary direction Wing Commander is taking. Thanks.
I'm glad to see it existing at all. I love the old series, and I'm definitely going to check it out on Xbox. I haven't had it hooked up to the net lately, but is it actually released? Is it out?
It is not out. It's supposed to come out this summer.
Oh, okay.
Vagabond is right. It's coming out on Xbox Live. Marketplace will be probably under, you know, it'll be 10 to 50, 10 to 20 bucks or something. But the good thing about Xbox Live Marketplace is that right now there's a size restriction on the game sizes. So they can only be, I don't know, I think it's, I want to say 128 megs. I don't know. That's a random number. But it's really small.
It was 64 megs, but now they've upped it.
They're small games, and I think in the future, I don't know if Microsoft has announced anything, but I can definitely see Live Marketplace having some type of integration with the PC, especially with Live for Windows coming out.
Definitely.
So they're not planning to do that with the Live for Windows launch, though. They're not separate at the moment, but
eventually in the foreseeable future, it could happen. And what also adds to that is XNA. I'm not sure what the developer's using to develop this, but with XNA Express and the tools that Microsoft has released, you can develop live games and PC games with the same toolkit.
Yeah, so it's entirely possible that it'll be easy to port over, if it does well. But I mean, this is going to be a very basic game, isn't it? I mean, it's Wing Commander Arena, so it's just going to be, you know, probably
dogfighting.
Yeah, like constant, jump in, very basic space combat. All it can really do is help to revive the Wing Commander brand a little bit and maybe get something bigger going, which would almost certainly be on the PC as well as the consoles.
Yeah, I think that only helps.
I don't know about you guys, but Wing Commander was like a big game for me. It was like one of the top five of my life up until like the mid-90s.
For me, it was TIE Fighter.
Same here. X-Wing versus TIE Fighter.
Really? Yeah. You like that?
I liked it a lot.
Because that's essentially what this is it's just a dual game like that, I think.
Well, X-Wing versus TIE Fighter wasn't just a dual game.
Was there some kind of storyline?
Yeah, it had missions.
It had a lot less story than the previous games, though.
And the subsequent one, yeah.
Yeah, TIE Fighter Clutch Position is still one of the top 10 games of all time.
Yes. That was cool. That had the polygons.
Yeah.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is John Shepard again. I'm sending in a question. I'm a Guild Wars player, hardcore, and I have some friends that have your magazine, and were currently telling me about something called Guild Wars 2, which is going to be like a completely separate thing from the original Guild Wars with Prophecies, Factions, and Nightfall, and that they will be canceling Prophecies and Factions in 08. I just wanted to know if there was any legitimacy or whatever word I'm looking for to these rumors. Apparently it came from your guys' magazine. So I just wanted to know if you guys had any comments about it, if it was just mad crazy rumor that this guy was making up, or if it's actually true. Please give me your comments. This is really important to me. All right, thank you very much. Keep doing a good job on the show.
Comment number one, go buy the magazine and read the story.
the May issue hits newsstands on April 3rd in a week, but subscribers should have it now, and that's all I guess we could say. Go buy the issue and read the story.
I think we can say that it's not true that they're canceling the existing games. They're not going to shut those off, so don't worry about that.
Hey, Jeremy, what have you been playing?
Virtua Tennis 3 on the Xbox 360. Which is the same game that came out a decade ago on the Dreamcast in high definition, but I still love it.
I just got it for the Sega to send it to me for the PlayStation 3, so not as good, obviously, but I'm looking forward to playing it because The original Virtua Tennis on the Dreamcast was just awesome.
Yeah.
Never been a good tennis game on PC, has there, really?
Not of late. That game actually isn't the first 360 game that runs at 1080p with full textures.
Oh,
takes
yeah?
advantage of that.
It certainly does on PS3, but then you expect it to do that. I think...
Yeah. It's also...
I think that the whole 1080p thing is a bit of a... From what I hear, if you choose to run a game at 1080p, there's a bit of a trade-off in terms of frame rate and performance, and you're actually just better off at 720p anyway.
No. In the 360, when it runs at 1080p, it's not real 1080p. It's just a scaler that scales it to that many pixels, but it's not actually... The frame buffer isn't big enough to hold... to actually render that many pixels.
Damn.
That makes any
interesting.
Sense.
Kicking the knowledge.
So wait a minute. The frame buffer isn't made to hold how many pixels?
To hold enough data to generate the polygons and the data at 1080p, 1920 by 1200 or 1080, but it renders it in 720 and then upscales it with the scaler.
Weak.
Well, how about that? Well, I only have a 720p set, so it doesn't matter. But it does
same here.
It does do the four-player online, which I guess is a big thing, because we've never had
not
that.
Not on PS3.
Ha-ha.
So, Gary, have you been playing any PC games?
No. I've been out of town. Give me a
That's
break.
That's right. Gary
I've
has
been playing, I've been playing
all
anything.
Right. All right. DJ, how about you?
I've been playing all kinds of stuff. I've been working on my review for Infernal. I went to an EA event last night, to play, some in like their first, or not last night, but the night before last, playing their first, multiplayer tournament for CNC3, which didn't actually end up being a tournament because it took too long, but I had a lot of fun there.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. So DJ and I, and Greg, we went to, the Command & Conquer 3. It was kind of like their launch event for their game. They wanted to show off the multiplayer features. And DJ sat in as the PC Gamer rep to demo in this exhibition match.
Their Battlecast features.
Their Battlecast features. There are these commentary features for spectators and shoutcasters. So DJ played with one of the game's producers against two IGN guys. And it was CNC3, the matches are technically only supposed to last 15, 20 minutes. This one went on for, I'd say, the good part of an hour.
It went on for half an hour. It would have gone a lot longer if they hadn't called it. But yeah, one of the guys had been on the other team had been playing like nonstop, working on their review. Whereas I haven't been able to play it all that much lately because I've been working on other stuff, so I was a little bit out of practice.
Long story short, DJ got his ass kicked and had to be rescued.
I did not get my ass kicked.
I thought it was going there.
I held my own, but I did get crippled because I lost.
There was a lot of DJ taking off his headphones and then tapping the other guy on the shoulder and saying, "Help me!"
Well, the guy that was really good was adjacent to me instead of the other guy, so I needed to call in reinforcements quite a bit. But I was playing as the alien race, the Skrin, and so was the other guy, and he destroyed my construction yard. Or I guess they call it like the drone control center or whatever for them. But so that kind of crippled me until I realized that the Skrin can rebuild their construction yard from their airfield, which I still had left. The other two factions they rebuild from their
war factory.
Vehicle, yeah, their war factory. So I didn't realize that, so I was kind of playing handicapped for a while, just out of my own stupidity. But I held my own. We eventually turned the tide, and we were starting to break his defensive line towards the end.
DJ, you love to recount your RTS antics. That's fun.
Well, it's a good story. It's a good ebb and flow in those things, and like there were quite a few like dramatic turns in this game, so it was a lot of fun. And I'm hoping that they put up when the game launches. I think it launches. Does it launch tomorrow?
Next week.
Next week. Okay.
I'm gonna get a copy of that.
Yeah. but yeah, I'm hoping they'll put up that game that we played on their
Battlecast.
Service. Yeah, because they had a couple of the development team up there commentating. They've got this whole Battlecast feature where they can. Basically act like announcers for like a football game. And, they can even draw on the screen like telecasters or it's Telecaster, right? No, Telestrator. Telestrator, that's right. they can draw circles around stuff and say, look at this, you know, and just talk about the events of the game. So, I'm looking forward to just going back and seeing, first of all, what the other guy did that, you know, nearly kicked my ass, so.
You still think it's 1 point worse than SubCom?
I prefer SubCom, personally. Right. It's more my style of play. CNC is more polished, but SubCom is more ambitious.
Okay.
Logan, what puzzle games have you been playing this week?
Stalker, and more Stalker. I went out and bought it. I couldn't wait.
You bought it?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Wow.
I've been waiting for it for years.
Really?
Yep. What? I know. I didn't know what it is. I don't know if it's the burned out environment, the look of it, the idea of a dog jumping through a portal and getting its head torn off. I don't know. It all works for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wow. So, it's a very compelling.
Yeah, that'll be my weekend.
And yeah, the same with me. I've been playing a lot of Stalker, for the review, and, you'll read my opinion when the issue hits.
But I guess the reason I haven't been playing much is because it does have a few problems with Vista right out of the gate, right?
It does. And so that's something they need to address, which is surprising because it's a DirectX 8/9 game. It's not very technologically advanced.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a driver issue, just something they didn't see coming. But and they'll almost certainly fix it, you know, within a couple weeks. I'm pretty sure they're already on it. So I'm not worried that it's, you know, going to be a really buggy game or anything. So
how's the multiplayer?
Very CS-like.
Okay.
All right. Well, that should do it for us this week. Join us again next week. Subscribe to our podcast at PCGamerPodcast.com. You too can submit a question if you just send an MP3 file or even a text question to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. Or subscribe to the magazine, which please, please, please do, at PCGamer.com/subscribe.
For all you Guild Wars people that are still listening, in that issue, we also have two giveaways for Guild
two
Wars.
Two exclusive giveaways,
in-game pet.
Mini pet?
In-game mini pet.
They
love the mini pet.
Pick that up. It's on newsstands April 3rd. And another shout out for Showdown, our big annual LAN event, which is coming up in San Jose. Check out the website, www.showdownland.com.
Also, let me throw in, if you guys like the podcast, especially if you like the video podcast, go on to iTunes and leave some reviews. There's the PC Gamer crew is definitely looking for some more reviews on the video podcast so we can get bumped up into the featured section. They'd love that.
We would definitely love that. So for everyone here, Dan Stapleton, Logan Decker, Jeremy
Thank
Williams, and Gary Witta, this is the PC Gamer Podcast signing off.
Adios.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Are you going to get Guitar Hero 2 for 360?
No, I don't think so. It's $90,
what?
Man. $90.
Oh, okay.
I have it.
Yeah, but you got a guitar with it.
Yeah, but I have it on PS2. So all I would be paying for is 10 games, high definition.
Oh, wait, you have Guitar Hero 2 on PS2 already?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. In that case, it's probably not worth it.
I just don't get why anyone would be excited about playing a rhythm game in high def.
Because anything is better in high def.
It's true.
That's absolutely true.
Ooh, garlic, peas, and mushrooms that you can steam in the microwave. I like that. It's a good idea. All right, I'm turning the TV off.
We should do our entire podcast while playing this game in the background.
Okay. Like, yeah.
You can do that if I get to finish this episode of CSI Miami while doing the podcast. Because I want to know who killed this guy.
No, I needed it. I needed it. I needed that. What's with the fucking space carrot? Oh, shit, they're rabbits. I didn't even notice that. Look at that. They're like astral rabbits. It's Peggle. It is like the greatest game probably since, I don't know, maybe Ultima.
So what am I hearing there? Logan, are you unwrapping something?
No, sorry. Okay, I take that back.
Yeah. You take back the unwrapping?
Yes, I do.
Okay.